You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. And we're doing this on Wednesday morning and probably 20 minutes or so before we came on. Got the latest big coaching carousel domino, Jeff Brohm leaving Purdue to go back to his hometown, Louisville, where there is an opening because of what I consider to be one of the more bizarre twists of the coaching carousel so far. Scott Satterfield leaving Louisville for Cincinnati. Not so much that he left, because he isn't really wanted there, that Cincinnati picked him. But Bruce, yeah, let's start with the second part of that. Why, of all the coaches, why is Cincinnati hiring Scott Satterfield, who is basically a 7-5 coach in the ACC?
I think Scott Satterfield is a better coach than that. And if you look, if they had hired him away from App State, where he was when I think he won like 42 games in his last 4 years there. And that's not that far away, honestly. It's not like you're hiring a Pac-12 guy to go to Cincinnati. I don't think that would have been a stretch. At Louisville in 4 years, he was basically a 500 coach. I mean, he was 25-24.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I think he's a really good coach. I think at Louisville, he got off to a really good start, taking over a bad situation from Bobby Petrino. And then it came out that he was listening to South Carolina for their coaching search, and that set people off. And I really feel like at that point, things got sideways in a hurry. And, you know, it was only a matter of time before he was going to either leave or they were going to fire him. I thought they were going to fire him at midseason after they lost to BC. He won enough games there to get to 7 wins. I think he's a good coach. I think when you're Cincinnati and you're looking at who they were looking at, I don't think they were looking at a lot of it was going to be a lot of first time head coaches that I think were in the mix for that. And Scott Satterfield, you know, his career record is what? 76-48. That's pretty good. I think this is a good hire for them. I mean, I know you probably don't, but I think he's a good coach. And I just think, you know, this, I suspect, will be a better situation for him than where he has been at Louisville. I mean, if you had told me Scott Satterfield was going to get like a mid-level SEC job, I'd be like, yeah, I could definitely see that. Or Scott Satterfield was going to be the next head coach at NC State or maybe even North Carolina. I wouldn't have been shocked by that. But, you know, he had a couple of dud years, especially, you know, his second year and then last year. But I think I would not sell him short.
Well, you know, I do those coaching grades every year. And when Louisville hired him, I gave them an A. I gave them the highest grade of that whole cycle. That's how much how highly I thought of Scott Satterfield coming out of Appalachian State. But at some point, your record is what your record is. And he's been there for 4 years and he's a 500 coach. Cincinnati is coming off a playoff appearance. They are going into the Big 12. You know what was interesting is they're not paying Satterfield what they were paying Luke Fickell, understandably so, but the assistant salary pool is $7.25 million. That's the same as Oklahoma's assistant salary pool. So they're loading up for the Big 12. But I don't know that Satterfield is like the guy that inspires you to think, oh, wow, this is the guy to lead them into the Big 12.
They should have hired.
Well, I know who was on the list, like those a couple MAC coaches and whatnot. It just doesn't seem like it was a very inspired search. Why is Deion Sanders at Colorado and not Cincinnati? Why is Jamie Chadwell at Liberty and not Cincinnati? Like there are, in fact, I even thought, you know, UNLV hired Barry Odom. Was Barry Odom any worse at Missouri than Scott Satterfield's been at Louisville. I just think it, you know, it's an eh hire. And
I feel like this is what I've affectionately referred to you as house cats do. Because it means you have the short attention span. It's why you thought Jim Harbaugh was a mediocre coach because he had a couple of not great seasons. And I figure like at the end of the day, these guys don't forget how to coach.
Okay, but how is that different than yes, I do with the Harbaugh example, but not all great Group of Five coaches become great Power Five coaches. I mean, that's like saying, well, you know, after Tom Herman got fired at Texas, well, he hasn't forgotten how to coach. He did great at Houston. Like, just sometimes Scott Frost hasn't forgotten how to coach. Look what he did at UCF. Just sometimes translate up.
That is true. And I think, look, this is one thing that Scott Frost in the Nebraska situation crystallized for me, and I truly believe it now. It is very pivotal for most coaches who you follow and what the dynamic is. And because that's the culture and that's how the players are going to respond to you. Right. So in the case of Scott Frost, when they got to UCF, he took over after, and you may want to believe this, John, an asshole. You know, George O'Leary's always the guy who's a hard guy to deal with, right? And he had players under his thumb, and then Scott Frost got there and that staff, and there were more players, coaches, and there was talent there, and the players responded to them, and that worked out really well. When they got to Nebraska, as it was explained to me, there was kind of a fire there, and they never really put it out, you know, culture wise. And so I think, you know, 2 years is, to me, 2 years as a head coach, whether it's, you know, Tom Herman's time at Houston or Scott Frost's time, it's something. It's not a extensive body of work, right? I think you're still figuring out about what somebody is. Whereas I do think Satterfield, look, and App State was, you know, has had a ton of success, but I think he did a really good job there. I am more sold on him. Now, look, you brought up Jamie Chadwell. I think I'm on the same side with you. I was like, how Jamie Chadwell, you know, has only moved up to Liberty is a head scratcher for me. I think he's a really, really good coach. I don't know why, you know, they have not been able to get him an SEC job or an ACC job.
Georgia Tech. Like, I'm not even saying it has to be, you know, a top 15 type school. All right. I've piled on Satterfield too much. Maybe he'll do well at Cincinnati, but you have to admit, at the end of the day, Louisville upgraded.
Yeah, I think Jeff Brohm is coming home. Jeff Brohm did really well at Western Kentucky. He did really well at Purdue. I mean, he's a brilliant offensive mind, and he's going to go into a place where they have a lot of NIL investment going on. You know, their Adidas thing is strong. You see it with the class that Satterfield was putting together. I mean, Pierce Clarkson, who's, you know, the son of basically the godfather of private quarterback coaching, Steve Clarkson. He's a really talented quarterback out here at Bosco. He's going. There's some other top receivers who are, on track to get there. I mean, I'm excited to see what Brohm can do going home. You know, I think, you know, he led Purdue to the Big Ten West title. They won 17 games the last 2 years. I don't know how much better he could have gotten Purdue.
That's the thing. I think he realized that was going to be their ceiling.
If I was
especially with the divisions going away.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of Scott Satterfield, but I was a Louisville fan, I'd be really fired up right now because players, it seemed like, are coming, and you got a really good offensive coach. It seems like they're invested in NIL. You're in a league where it's like Clemson's a little wobbly compared to at least where they were a couple of years ago. Florida State is on the right track now with Norvell. You know, we'll see if Miami's recruiting soon pays off, but it didn't. They're in the ditch right now. I think this is a really good opportunity for Jeff Brohm to make a big splash at home.
What percent chance do you give Jeff Brohm to win an ACC championship in the next 3 years?
Can you say next 4 years? Can we do that?
Next 4 years.
60%.
That is bullish. That is pretty bullish. I was going to go 50. And you know, this shows you how much confidence we have in him because, you know, yeah, Clemson has slid a little bit. I mean, they still went 11-2 this year. Florida State seems on the up. You know, Cristobal, if nothing else, has been given, you know, an absolutely enormous investment to work with at Miami. But beyond that, I mean, there's no other program in the ACC right now that you're like, ah, he's really going to have to struggle to compete with them. So, you know, I think, you know, say what you will about Bobby Petrino. He contended for, you know, an ACC title in 2016 when Clemson was at its absolute peak. I think Louisville has always been a bit of a sleeping giant program. So I think he should do well there. Anything else coaching carousel wise since our last episode on Sunday that we should be keeping an eye on?
You know, I think there's a few jobs that are still to be filled. As you mentioned, Barry Odom got UNLV. Kevin Wilson is leaving Ohio State to go to Tulsa. He's a longtime Oklahoma assistant. I think you'll see some a lot of assistant moves happen, but right now we're in this NIL avalanche time of transfer portal stuff and everything else. And I think people are sorting through it. Be interesting to see what kind of staff moves get made at Ohio State on that staff. We know Brian Hartline was briefly a candidate for Cincinnati. I wouldn't be surprised if Purdue looked, you know, tried to see if he was interested in going there or whatnot. I think one of their young assistant coaches, Keenan Bailey, who's been a behind the scenes guy that Ryan Day really likes, I would expect he probably end up as like the tight ends coach there or something. That's, you know, something for Ohio State fans, I think, to keep an eye on, because I think he'll be somebody you're starting to see guys like that who are young assistants behind the scenes who I think get very valued. And all of a sudden it's like, you start seeing some of these staffs. Like, I know Trent Dilfer at UAB has hired a few of these guys. And I think those guys now have a lot more upward mobility than maybe they did 5 years ago as these staff pools have gotten so big. So expect a lot of other stuff going on. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be, you know, there's always that one big move that kind of swings around January 1st. Mm-hmm. There's another one that's still going. I have no idea if anybody jumps into the NFL pool, but it's not, you know, it's crazy because I know you and I talked about this a little bit Sunday, or a lot of Sunday, on the splash hire of Deion Sanders. You know, we saw video, and we're going to see a lot of video from inside that program, but of his first players meeting, it was blunt. It was like, hey, the portal, maybe you need to look at it kind of thing. I think he had some really blunt conversations with not just, you know, the players there, but it's interesting in that I talked to one of his, you know, I think it's his first commit of this class. There was, you know, we mentioned there was a 5-star 2025 kid who's already committed, but, you know, on, we're taping this on.
They have rankings for the 2025 class. Those are kids who are currently sophomores.
Yes. No, I think they're, sophomores. I'm sure there are rankings for, you know, 2026 even. I mean, that's
the 247 goes up to, well, anyway, say what you were going to say. And I'm going to look this up.
So I'm sorry. What are you talking about? Okay. So Jordan Hall is a kid from Columbus, Ohio. Enormous kid, 6'8", 325. Hasn't been playing football for that long. And he was committed to Deion at Jackson State. And so when I talked to him yesterday, he got a call on Saturday night from Tim Brewster. Remember that name? The former, you know, Minnesota head coach who's bounced around as an assistant is now on Deion's staff and was on at Jackson State. And he was basically said, are you ready to be a Buffalo? And the kid was like, yeah, I was kind of confused. I hadn't been on Instagram for a little bit. Didn't realize the Deion thing to Colorado had already happened. So he committed, and when he committed, he said, I'm part of that Louis luggage he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And people saw that some, and he was like, man, I got a lot of hate from that because people were like, man, you're only a 3-star. Is that, you know, like kind of downgraded him. And so he said something, which our friend Ari Wasserman would probably cringe at, but he was like, you know, like people think I can't compete. It's like, honestly, they think stars matter, but they don't. So
Jordan Hall. He just shot a dagger in the heart of Ari Wasserman.
No, I know. So Jordan Hall is going to Boulder, and he will have a chip on his shoulder because of probably a few people just took issue that the fact that he was a 3-star, and they think everybody going to CU will be a 5-star now. But interesting times in Boulder.
The 2025 kid you're referring to is Winston Watkins Jr., a receiver at IMG Academy, ranked 13th in the class. He is committed to Colorado. I would encourage people, if you haven't already, go on YouTube and look up Deion's first meeting with his team. Because, by the way, they're documenting everything. This documentary crew is with him 24/7. I was saying to one of the beat writers, like, you're going to have more inside access than any other beat writer in the country of any other school, because they're going to film everything. Anyway, watch the video of the team meeting, because it is mesmerizing. You know, Coach Prime obviously is unlike any other coach. He is basically talks like a preacher. Everything rhymes.
Did you not see any of his press conference? Because that's what I was like.
His press conference was like a stand-up act. Yeah.
No, everything he does is mesmerizing.
Everything he does is mesmerizing. And if you watch the team meeting or the press conference, you're going to be like, but no, more so the team meeting. You watch that and you're going to be like, my gosh, can you imagine him in a recruit's living room? How would every recruit ever say no? Because he's mesmerizing to the point where, you know, and this is a little controversial, people have mixed feelings about it. He basically told the team that he's going to run them all off. And he's basically like, he just kept saying, I'm coming. I'm going to go back to Jackson State, play in the Celebration Bowl, and then I'm coming. And when I come, not a lot of you are going to still be in this room, basically. And so he just told them that. And then within like 20 seconds, he's got them chanting along with him. I'm looking for players who are, say it with me, smart, smart. Yes, sir. He just basically told you you're going to get cut. Now,
no, I think what he did is the ones who will still be there, he has challenged them. Yeah. Because they were 1-11. And, you know, as I heard, he told a bunch of players in one of the position rooms, I watched all the film of you guys. You guys are quitters and not welcome here. And to that message of you better be better or else you're not hanging out here. Just, you know, it's interesting because what the portal has done, what NIL has done, is made everything like, what have you done for me lately?
Right.
And I think he has been very blunt about this. Now, a lot of this stuff happens in less articulate ways, in less, you know, the coaches aren't as engaging. Maybe the
message. He said it all out loud, right? Like, yeah. I mean, Lincoln Riley ran off a whole bunch of guys, but you didn't say that out loud. There is a rule people should be aware of. I didn't know about it until doing this Lincoln Riley story last spring. A new coach can cut players. It is the only circumstance where you are allowed to cut players. However, you do that, the university still has to honor their scholarship if they decide to stay in school. So that would get very expensive if you, say, ran off 50 players and they all stayed in school. I think the assumption is they would hit the portal. But he is arriving. It's just this amazing confluence. He's arriving. He's unorthodox, and he's arriving at a time when the rules are all changing on the fly.
Perfect coach at the perfect time for Colorado. Yeah,
absolutely. And he's able to take advantage of the confluence of transfers being immediately eligible, NIL, and most notably to me, remember, we just got rid of the 25 scholarship limit per class. That just happened. This is the first class where it's in effect. But you have to stay at 85. He could theoretically sub out all 85 players for 85 new players. I don't think it's going to get to that, but I would imagine it'll be a pretty high number. So we're going to see. You know, everybody talks about that Lincoln Riley and USC last year was kind of a new milestone in terms of turning over a roster in 1 year. This may eclipse that. We shall see. I also am very impressed with the staff he's putting together. You know, you mentioned candidates for the Cincinnati job. Sean Lewis, the Kent State head coach, was a candidate for that job. And he had left Kent State to be Deion's OC at Colorado. So I have a feeling he's going to bring in a pretty high-profile DC. We don't know yet who. Jim Leonard is on the market. So, you know, it's going to be entertaining and wild. The portal is, yeah.
Before we get into that, just to button up on Deion, the gulf between Deion as a speaker and as a presence compared to every other coach we've ever seen, you know, like there was that thing I saw. There's like a Twitter site that just ranks everything. And at one point it said coaches with the most swagger. And it was like Deion won. And I think they said Lane was two. It should say Deion won. Well, not a knock on Lane, but it was like there aren't. And then start the next person at like 31.
Somebody asked me who is the second most charismatic coach now? And I was thinking about it. And the answer I came up with was Shane Beamer. He's
I like Shane Beamer. No, stops too. This is, you know what? Unfortunately, this is too. Middle-aged dads who are in our 50s.
I know. I'm not disagreeing with you about the huge gap. I'm just trying to think of who would be.
Shane Beamer's not charismatic.
If you had to rank somebody number two, who would it be?
Charismatic.
Who's not?
Shane Beamer's not charismatic. He's a nice guy. He's not charismatic.
He does those funny videos. Been in the same room with him? All right, who's your answer? Is it Lane?
I don't have a good answer for that. He's not, though. He's a nice guy, and he's done a good job.
What did Shane Beamer do to you?
He didn't do anything. It was actually like, if you ask me which coaches are kind of, John Calipari has some legit charisma.
Yes, he does.
Like, Shane Beamer's nowhere near
Jay
that.
Wright. Like that's the thing. Basketball coach, a lot of the basketball coaches fit this description. College football coaches, you know, they generally fit a stereotype. You know, I was thinking about that, like just how different Deion's press conference was, obviously, where he's cracking all those one-liners. Like the typical coach press conference is, we're going to do things, you know, we're going to come here and we're going to do things the right way. And we're not going to cut any corners. And you know, we have a certain set of values and we're going to make sure this was not like that at all.
The only one football coach I can think of who did have some charisma, again, it's more in the Calipari-ish range, was Pete Carroll. Yeah. Like, but stop with Shane Beamer, because you're just basically outing yourself.
This is the guy who got the mayo. Like, watch some of his post-game interviews after these big wins.
If you're getting mayonnaise dumped on you, by definition.
You're underselling Beamer in a
big
game. But it's like, you still only give me an answer. Who's number two?
I'm struggling. I don't know. Like, you know, it's funny because we mentioned this guy a couple minutes ago. A good barometer, I think, of who has some presence to them is stand outside the coaches meeting at the AFCA and see who kind of has a glow to them. Mm-hmm. You know, surprisingly, and again, I wouldn't put him in even in the Calipari range, but Jamie Chadwell has a glow to him a little
bit. He does.
More so than I would say Shane does. You know, like.
Oh, I got it. Butch Jones. Just kidding.
No.
Wilcox. No.
Nice. Yeah. Nice guy, Justin Wilcox. But no. And I don't think he would say
Tom it, Allen. You know?
What?
Tom Allen. I'm looking at a list of every coach in the country, and what stands out is how many of them are absolutely not in this description.
Well,
right?
Kirby Smart has the best program in college football right now. He doesn't have any.
Eli Drinkwitz? No.
No.
Jed Fish?
No, he has a little more than some of the guys you just mentioned, though.
Well, as of 2 months ago, I would have said Herm Edwards.
Herm Edwards definitely has some presence. I mean, I don't think he was a good college coach, but he definitely has. It's the same reason why
I've got it.
Herm was not bad on TV.
Mike Gundy. It's Mike Gundy. He's definitely the most like biggest presence of any of the, we'll say, incumbent coaches.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, let's talk Portal. I was bracing for craziness, and it still exceeded my wildest expectations. I don't know why the coaches thought this would be a good idea to do these compressed windows, because I get it. They didn't like the fact that a guy could enter the portal any day of the year, but it's caused this situation where the Monday after the regular season ends, a couple weeks before signing day, in the middle of the coaching carousel, like 1,000 guys, and I'm not making that number up, 1,000 guys have entered the portal since Monday. And it's absolutely dizzying. You know, I try to keep up on Twitter, but I remember that on Monday, I saw that Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State, the quarterback, four-year starting quarterback, had entered the portal. And I was like, holy cow. And then I realized, like, oh, he announced that 3 hours ago. That to me was one of the bigger surprises, along with NC State star quarterback Devin Leary. Like, these are not guys who lost their jobs or struggling where they are. Like, they could have come back, played, and been the starter again this year. But no, they've decided to enter the portal. Who are some other guys who you saw come through the ticker or whatever, and you're like, wow, I can't believe that guy's going to be available for someone?
I mean, we knew DJ was going to come. I mean, we've been hearing that for a while, so that wasn't a surprise. I think Spencer Sanders was a big surprise to me. Just, he was the guy who, like, they'd bring to media days, it felt like, every year at Big 12. I mean, to me, that one was a surprise, not a surprise.
I believe he was the 2021 Big 12 Player of the Year, or Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, you know, like, to see both former USC quarterbacks, not a surprise. It was like they had meh kind of years in 2022 and JT Daniels and Keaton Slovis. I thought, you know, even Oklahoma State, you know, this is a really good running back. That's, you know, or is, looks like they're going to lose a really good running back. Obviously, if you go into the portal, it doesn't mean you have to go. But it was just kind of an avalanche. Like, Dorian Singer was really, really good player. It was like
1,000-yard receiver.
Led the Pac-12 in receiving yards. And that program seems to be on the upswing. You know, they have a lot of guys coming back. They won 5 games. I'm guessing they're on track. They should be like a 7 or 8 at least win team, you would think, next year. But to see him go in, and I think, you know, what you start to hear from the coaches is certain guys are looking out there almost like putting up a bat signal going, okay, what can somebody do for me NIL-wise, right?
That's the thing, right? Like, you don't know who's entering the portal because they genuinely think they, you know, need to find a better situation for their football career. And who's entering the portal because the collective's waving $500,000 at them.
Yeah. And I think that's the part where it gets really interesting, because the money is, like, we've talked about this for, I felt like, months. If you were somebody with NIL money, why are you throwing it at high school recruits who are completely unproven? And we see the track record. If even the 5-star quarterbacks, it's like they hit on like 30%, and that's before you're putting money in their pocket. Now you're putting money in their pocket. I'm guessing the hit rate of 5-star quarterbacks is going to be less than 30%. And so you're better off going to put that money into guys who've actually played in college football and are somewhat established and have done it, because then at least you're, you know, it's an easier proposition. Like, I like living in Los Angeles, look at how the best players other than DTR at UCLA are all transfers. All of them. Zach Charbonnet, Laiatu, Jake Bobo. I mean, it's been this way for a couple of years under Chip Kelly. And it really was this way for Lincoln Riley. Obviously, Caleb, we think, is going to win the Heisman. Travis Dye was terrific at Oregon. He was terrific while he was healthy here. You know, Jordan Addison won a Biletnikoff, was terrific. Mario Williams showed flashes at OU, and he, you know, and it's like, and then you look at the other side of the ball, maybe they had one good player who was here previously, but it was all kind of like the guys who are kind of mediocre players before, largely still mediocre players, you know. Like, so to me, it's like, what are you doing throwing all the money at guys who are 4 and 5 stars out of high school who haven't really done anything yet?
I spoke the other day with our friend Mike Caspino, the lawyer who Does a lot of these things.
What is he really?
He is technically a lawyer.
Technically a lawyer, but he did the deal. He did one of the biggest money deals for Nico, who is going to Tennessee, and seven-figure deal. And
a lot of them. He's done a lot. He was doing a lot of the high-level work.
Okay, so he technically is a lawyer, but Jimmy Sexton does these deals. Jimmy Sexton's an agent.
I don't know. I mean, technically, to be an agent, you have to register somewhere, right, to be classified as an agent. So
what's the difference?
I mean, like, this is not why I didn't bring him up for that reason. I brought him up.
I know, because I'm just trying to identify him properly, because
he told me that starting about 3 weeks ago, the offers for high school recruits just stopped as they turned their attention to the portal. And I agree with you. I asked, I was at Ole Miss in the spring, and I asked Lane Kiffin about that. Why are like portal players like a relative steal compared to these high school recruits who haven't proven anything? And he thought that would correct itself. And I think that's absolutely what's happened. What we haven't seen yet is, but I think it'll happen at some point, right? Like, we've talked about a lot of good players. We haven't talked about necessarily like a guy who's going to end up going in the top 10 of the draft in a couple of years, but you know that's coming. Somebody is going to offer seven figures to steal away somebody's high round draft pick. The guy who you're hearing, I don't know that it's going to happen, but that maybe there's people attempting to do this, is Drake May. Can a big name program like an Alabama get their boosters to pony up a seven figure deal to get Drake May to come to their school?
Man, those are, you know, imagine if you were Alabama, you've had great quarterbacks after great quarterbacks. Doesn't look like there's, you know, that right now in the pipeline, or certainly anybody proven. Mm-hmm. And now you can add Drake May. Now, you obviously got to upgrade the receiver position, and a bunch of those guys, was like five of their top seven receivers are in the portal right now anyway. And it wasn't a great group, especially by Alabama standards. I mean, the bidding war, and granted, Drake May has all sorts of deep ties to UNC and that program with his family. But if he wanted to, like, say, hey, let's start the bidding war at like $3 million, I'm guessing that would seem cheap compared to the impact he could make given all the other NIL money. Like, I know of last year, there was a good, but not certainly All-American caliber defensive end who got $500,000 to go to a Power Five school. And I don't know if he had more than four sacks this year, and he got $500,000. And
you're really going to give all those details and not the name?
I pretty much did. I mean, he was at a Big Ten school. Max lives near it. I don't know. That's it. I'm stopping.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Can I guess?
No, you cannot. I've already.
Well, you just gave me a bunch of clues. I can't guess on the air.
No, you can't. You can.
I guess that technically is accusing somebody of, because everything we've just described is against the rules, but nobody cares about the rules. So I guess I can't out somebody who would have technically broken the rules. What was I going to say? Well, if you're Drake May, well, first of all, let's look at this from two sides. If I agree with you that if you could guarantee today that you're going to get Drake May, at the way he's played at North Carolina, for 14 games next year, name your price. What if you pay him $2 million and he tears his ACL in the second game? Like, that's the risk of that to me. From the Drake May side, you know, he would think he would be somebody who, and don't get me wrong, like, we're talking life-changing money there, but the real life-changing money is when he's going to get drafted. And I would think he is going to keep his eye on that. And does he think, if he thinks, hey, I'm not, UNC is not preparing me well enough for the NFL, I need to go play for Alabama or Ohio, for Ryan Day, you know, like, but I think that, you know, when you start talking guys who, if they turned pro today, would be a mid round pick or a late round pick, then yeah, like, somebody's offering me $500,000, I'm going.
Okay, well, let's talk about one specific example that's interesting to me. DJ Uiagalelei, former five-star, as powerful an arm as there is in college football right now. Big kid, moves pretty well, whatever, 6'4", 240. Completed 62% of his passes, 22 touchdowns, 7 picks. It did not feel that good as those numbers, the stat line, right? He ended up losing his job late in the year to Cade Klubnik. He is on the move. DJ probably made a bunch of money. He got a national TV ad for Dr. Pepper last year. If you're him, and if you're coming out of this, especially if you're going back to the West Coast where he's from, I think the question is, who can get me most ready to be an NFL quarterback? Because if you aren't developed more, there's going to be big questions. Like if he went in the draft right now, nobody's taking him in the first round. I'm guessing he probably wouldn't go in the first three rounds, right? Because there's questions of how, you know, who can cater an offense to do the things he does well and maybe not ask him to do some of the stuff that he struggles with.
Well, the school that everybody's saying with him is UCLA. And Chip Kelly was an NFL coach. But it's not like he has a long history of turning out NFL quarterbacks from college, right? We'll see where DTR goes.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, UCLA does not have NIL money of substance. No. Relative. So the question is, which is interesting, the third string quarterback at UCLA, Chase Griffin, has 29 different NIL deals. 29. He is making a ton of money because he is a brilliant kid off the field, and he's been very industrious and done a lot of deals. But he's in Los Angeles, which certainly helps that. DJ coming home, like, I don't think if you're the next school that's recruiting DJ, I don't think the sell is about what can we do for you NIL wise. It's really what can we do for you football wise, because the NIL piece is like that. You said this a couple minutes ago, like the real money for him going forward will be if he can become an NFL quarterback. If not, his NIL money is going to be for 2023. And then he may be a fringe NFL quarterback, or he's going to be playing in the XFL or the US.
We're talking about this guy like it's some sort of no-brainer that wherever, like, we're making it sound like he can just pick his school. If I didn't see that from him at Clemson. He didn't, for all the recruiting hype, he doesn't look to me like a guy who, here, let me give an example. Jaden Daniels is not the situation. Actually, let me bring up Jaden Daniels. The situation that Brian Kelly brought him into was one where he was no guarantee to win the job, right? He did win the job, but Nussmeier was there at that time. Miles Brennan was there. So it wasn't going to be the end of the world if he came there and didn't pan out. That's what I would do. I would bring DJ. If I was a coach, I'd want to bring him into a situation where I have a plan B. Because if you're just going to put all your eggs in his basket, what if he just plays exactly the way he's played at Clemson the last 2 years? So here's an idea. I don't know. DJ, so I just, first of all, credit to our guy, Max Olson. If you look up DJ's page on ESPN.com, the very first thing it says is that he's in the transfer portal. Max Olson of The Athletic reports. He is the portal authority. So because 2020 doesn't count, and that was his freshman year, DJ technically has 3 years of eligibility left. What about go to USC, redshirt for a year, compete for the job after Caleb?
I have a question, though. He's played, 2020 doesn't count, but he played a full season in 2021, and he played a full season in 2022.
So he has 2 years of playing eligibility left, plus a redshirt that he hasn't used.
I see what you're saying. I think the question on that, though, is Malachi Nelson, who's the top-rated quarterback in next year's class, he's going to redshirt. And I think a lot of people around here think Malachi Nelson will be the next one after Caleb leaves. Like, there's no guarantees of that.
Right. Guarantees of that, but he'll be a true freshman. I mean, he'll be a redshirt freshman.
He'll be a redshirt
competing with a guy who would be in his fourth year of college. And hey, look, there's no downside.
If you're Lincoln Riley, you can sit there and say, I can take, if you're really not sure on Malachi, I can take whoever's going to be the hot quarterback the next year, who may be more proven than DJ is right now.
Well, and if you're DJ, you can go there, compete for the job, and if you don't get it, transfer to another place. JT Daniels is about to transfer to his fourth different school. Speaking of former USC quarterbacks, I don't know. Do you have a great suggestion for DJ other than UCLA, who everybody thinks is the obvious one?
I don't know what's going to happen at Oregon right now. Will Stein did a good job with Frank Harris. He's the new OC there. I mean, they have, it looks like, and again, a lot can happen before signing day, they have a five-star quarterback who's committed there, who everybody thinks is super talented in the, you know, but again, he hasn't done it. And so
Bo Nix could come back.
I think Bo Nix, you know, from everything I heard, it sounds like he's leaning towards coming back. So, you know, if that's not open, and then you're looking, and we know Washington's not open because Michael Penix Jr. is coming back on the West Coast. I don't think UCLA, I don't think USC is a realistic option. I don't see him deciding, I'm going to go sit out a year.
Well, you know who on the West Coast really needs a quarterback and I think has a great offensive coach? Oregon State. They are going to be hunting in the portal, to say the least. And Jonathan Smith is a great offensive coach. He hasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe an Oregon State quarterback under him has gone to the NFL yet. But I mean, that's a good situation. Oregon State is probably sitting there looking at the portal going, wow, we have a lot of options here.
Jonathan Smith, Pac-12 coach of the year. I agree. Really good coach. Look, Cal just hired Jake Spavital. When he went back there the first time, he took Davis Webb, who he knew, and they had the number one offense in the Pac-12. Now they have a really good running back, but they need major help on the offensive line. But
they've lost a lot of guys to the portal already.
They do have a really good running back though, in Jaden Nott. But then they have pretty good receivers.
There's one other guy we want to get to the mailbag, but there's one other intriguing quarterback I wanted to mention. Brennan Armstrong from Virginia. Brennan Armstrong 2 years ago had like 4,600 yards of offense. He was phenomenal. I think he was all ACC, maybe not first team. And then this year took a big step back. There was a coaching change, obviously. Bronco Mendenhall stepped down. His OC went to Syracuse. Tony Elliott comes in. And
his quarterback coach, Jason Back, also went to Syracuse. I would not be surprised if Brennan Armstrong goes to Syracuse the two, you know, Robert and I as the offensive coordinator you're talking about. Beck was the quarterback coach. It worked really well for them, like you said. I think Garrett Schrader
could come back.
He could. It's just the question is and this is where it is interesting, because if you are Dino Babers, ultimately, who do you ride then? I mean, you got two coaches who know how good that guy was. It's an interesting dynamic there.
It is. So that would be a logical domino. By the way, Brennan Armstrong is one of those guys. There's been a lot of them so far. When I see them enter the portal, I go, how can they have eligibility left? But, you know, we still have the COVID year. So a lot of guys are going to have five.
This blows my mind a little. I almost like, you know, I've heard so much about modern day because I travel with Leinart all the time and everything. But like, I feel like JT Daniels will be playing in college after Cole Leinart leaves. You know, it's like he's been there for so long. And part of it is because, you know, remember, he left early from high school to go there in the first place.
He has had quite a journey, to say the least, right? He started as a true freshman at USC in 2018 and entered the next season as a starter and got hurt in the first game. Keaton Slovis took over. And that was the end of that. Transfers to Georgia. Everybody assumes he's going to be the starter there. Can't beat out Stetson Bennett. Spends 2 years at UGA, transfers to West Virginia, and mostly from what I can tell, had kind of an injury-plagued year this year. So
I'm rooting for JT Daniels at his next spot because you kind of feel for somebody who's like had that five-star, you know, thing attached to them. And then they kind of get dinged a lot of times, especially on social media, you know, as it comes. And I'm rooting for JT Daniels in his next act too.
I am as well. And if I recall, his other finalist when he chose West Virginia was Oregon State. So
keep an eye on that. There's your Jonathan Smith connection. If it's
yeah.
There you go, Stu. Way to leave some candy out there.
if you are somebody who's trying to make sense of the portal, which is moving, you know, at an insane pace, I highly recommend you
should follow Max Olson.
Yeah. Follow Max Olson on Twitter. He knows exactly when, as soon as a guy enters the portal, he has it. And, you know, and then the step two of this will be when these guys make their decisions of where they're going to go next. Mailbag, as always, send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com.
All right, Stu, let's start. This one I feel like is right up your alley. It is from Blaine in Virginia. Is this past weekend giving you cold feet about the expanded playoff? A three-loss team getting a bye is ridiculous. Week zero becoming week one means players boiling in August heat against weak competition in empty stadiums before students arrive.
That hasn't happened yet, by the way.
Okay.
They haven't necessarily agreed to do that.
First round games will go head-to-head against the NFL, a ratings nightmare. I want to hear your thoughts on that, Stu. The semifinals and finals are going to have to be played on weekdays. So if you make the conference championship game and the playoff game, fans are going to have to shell out for four neutral site games, the latter two on weekdays. Blaine is raising some good points. Okay, Stu, let's defend this.
I'm not having cold feet about having an expanded playoff, but I do think there are two major flaws in the system that they design. Now, every season is different. Not every season is going to play out the way this year did, but the way this year played out, he's right. Like, they've reserved the top four seeds for conference champions, the top four conference champions. The fourth conference champion this year is 10-3 Utah. So 10-3 Utah in this system.
And also worth noting, this is in the model where this wasn't like North against South in the conference. The Pac-12 had already gone to one division, right?
Yes, so, exactly. And they went to it. It's ironic, right? They went to it because they wanted to have the two best teams in the game. And I'm not saying Utah wasn't one of the two best teams, but they got in basically on a weird tiebreaker. It could have been 10-2 Washington. So Utah is a first round bye team, and Ohio State is not. Ohio State, 11-1, number four in the country, has to play a first round game. That seems like a flaw. It's a flaw. Now, you could say, and people are saying, like, well, you should get rewarded if you're a conference champion. This incentivizes conference championships. I get that sentiment. I do. But it comes at the expense of having a really, like, you know, you think about the NCAA tournament when the brackets come out and people look at it and go, oh, man, this one seed has a way easier path than that one seed. You know, it's coming at the expense of competitive balance. And so the example I used in the written mailbag is that if you look at what this year's bracket would have been with this year's rankings in this format, I argue Ohio State has an easier path than Michigan, who beat them and won the Big Ten. Michigan gets a bye, but as the two seed in there, when they do play in the quarterfinal, they would likely be playing number seven seed, and I'm using air quotes right now, Alabama. Ohio State plays in a first round game against Penn State at home. And if they win that, they get to play number three, again, air quotes, number three seed Clemson. Does anybody think Clemson is a three-spot better team than Ohio State this year? Absolutely not. So I think it's a huge flaw in the system. And then the other thing he mentions, I do think that the sentiment is strong that they kind of had to do this where the quarterfinal games are at New Year's Six Bowls because of the existing contracts for the last 2 years of the current contract. But when it starts anew in 2026, I think the quarterfinal games will be on campus, just for many reasons. It just doesn't make sense for the top four seeds to not get to host a home game, for, as he said, for fans to have to travel to that many sites in a row. As we're taping this, they're having the SBJ panel in Vegas with a bunch of the ADs and the commissioners. And I saw Kevin Warren himself say he's now open to quarterfinal games on campus. So I think that will happen.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nicole Davidson in Austin, Texas, Bruce Hookham. With the Heisman conversation heating up, I am shocked Bijan Robinson is not more in the conversation. I think she wrote this right before the finalists were announced. He was not one of them. At this point in college football, is it impossible to win the Heisman unless you are on a playoff contending team? I'm going to leave the second part out.
It's near impossible. You need to have otherworldly kind of stat numbers. And the reality is, like, if you ask me, is Bijan the best running back in college football? That's certainly the best. If you ask me who's the best, like, pro prospect, I would say Bijan is. Having said that, you know, the running back, the player on the team that won the championship in his conference is a guy that
he might have been on, no Heisman mention.
And, but he might have been on my ballot. I
Deuce
can't
Vaughn.
Say
he can't say if he did or not. Yep. I think,
like, to me, I think running backs are hard. It just like as I'm looking at this right now, Bijan was what in where did Bijan finish? Fifth in the country in rushing yards. Not certainly not bad. He averaged over 6 yards a carry. They had a better year, but it's like you're not winning. Like, as a running back, I think you need to have like well over 2,000 yards if you're not going to be like Derrick Henry won it on a really good team. Mark Ingram won it on like those are great teams they were on. You know, Barry Sanders had an all-time year.
You know what's most telling about that, Bruce? Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin, who had at least one 2,000-yard season, as I recall, and then two others that were real close to that, was never a Heisman finalist. You know, it used to be 2,000 yards was like this mythical figure that, you know, if you're Ricky Williams, if you're Barry Sanders, right? But it didn't get him anywhere. So Bijan Robinson, look up his game by game. He definitely was very underappreciated against Big 12 champion Kansas State. He had 30 carries for 209 yards and two receptions for 34 yards against Kansas. 25 carries for 243 yards.
Where's numbers against Alabama? That was a much-watched game.
21 carries for 57, three catches for 73. His like, you know, you're not going to come back from this against TCU. I think that was probably the, other than the Alabama game, would have been the most watched game they played all season. Complete non-factor, 12 carries, 29 yards.
I think that's not the reason. But I think that's part of why, like, could he have, there's a difference between could he have won it and could he have at least been a finalist? I think a big part of, like, to me, the Heisman show, which I don't watch the Heisman show anymore. I haven't watched it, you know, much of it in a long
time. Which Heisman show are you referring to?
The one where it's the presentation for the Heisman.
Oh, okay.
So it's an hour-long show. Like, if I was them, you know, you should be honoring the best players in the country. I mean, do people care if there's six guys there? I remember I've covered it, like, probably five times. When there's three guys, it's less of an event, right? Mm-hmm. When there's six guys, I think there's more of a – like, I remember being at the Heisman when it was Johnny, Colin Klein, and Manti Te'o. Which is like a super interesting trio now because Johnny was like Elvis and Manti Te'o. We talked about, like, you know, the Netflix. I'm trying to remember who did that great documentary.
Netflix.
Thank you. It's a fascinating story. And here's Colin Klein, who I think is everything I've heard from people in the Big 12 is like one of the rising star coaches in college football and was, you know, as a great player in his own right. But like, there just wasn't like beyond Johnny, there wasn't that sizzle there. Because it was one, you know, there's a couple of players. If you have six guys, then I think they get celebrated. Whereas, you know, people have kind of, it's unfair to, you know, Stetson Bennett is going to get gonged a little bit because they're like, wait, Stetson Bennett's there as opposed to like Stetson Bennett's a terrific player. And he's obviously on a great team. I don't have a problem with Stetson Bennett, you know, being honored and being there. I just think they probably should add a couple more guys in addition.
Well, they actually changed it in the last few years. It used to be that they basically just wherever there was a drop off in the vote, that's where they cut it off. And I agree with you. Like, there were years where there were only a lot of years where there were only three guys because there was such a big drop off after that. At some point, And I could not tell you what I'm looking through it. In 2018, there were only three finalists. That may have been the last year of that way of doing it, because now it's four and only four, no matter what. So the four this year are Caleb Williams, Max Duggan, Stetson Bennett, and CJ Stroud. And when this came out, when this got announced, I have to admit, when Stetson Bennett's name came on the screen, I was a bit shocked. I was not expecting that. But I also don't know that it's some huge travesty. But some people did react that way. Like, I think for the last 2-3 years, there's always been this, I feel like the respect level for Stetson Bennett has always lagged behind where he was, right? He was the walk-on. I mean, even, you know, part of the problem, I think part of his image was that everybody knew, like, even Kirby Smart didn't trust him. Like, he went out looking for, you know, that's why he went out and got the Wake Forest quarterback. What was his name?
I'm blanking too.
Jamie Newman.
Thank you.
Went out and got JT Daniels and Jamie Newman in the same year, which tells you how much faith he had in Stetson Bennett. He started, oh no, another name I'm not going to remember. The kid, he transferred to Florida. That guy was the starter, the week one starter. Shoot, I don't. DeJuan Mathis. Basically, he was looking for anybody but Stetson Bennett. So I think that put him in a hole reputation-wise. And then he also wasn't putting up big stats. But this year, this is what I, after the fact, when I looked it up, because, you know, I was a little surprised. And then I looked at his season. He basically rose to the occasion in all of their biggest games and then threw a bunch of picks in their other games. Against Oregon, 25 of 31, 368 yards, 2 touchdowns. That is quite good. South Carolina, 16 of 23 for 284 and 2 touchdowns. Number one, Tennessee, 17 of 25 for 257 and 2 touchdowns. And LSU in the SEC championship game, 23 of 29 for 274 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Note, there were no interceptions in any of those games. When you look at it that way, you're like, okay, I see it.
Yeah, look, I give him the credit. He deserves it. He's earned it. He is... not say anybody else hasn't earned it, but I mean, it is, nothing has come easy for him in terms of getting doubted everywhere along the way. I think it's awesome what he's done.
And when you say he earned it, we're not saying that Hendon Hooker did not. Like,
no, I'm just saying like, he has really been doubted everywhere along the way. Like, if it was up to me, the three guys that I would say I would think should have also been there. And I'm going to take Blake Corum out of there because he got injured before their biggest game. But Blake Corum also might have been on my ballot too. But I would have liked to have seen Hendon Hooker there because Tennessee was crap until he showed up. And yeah, he got hurt and missed the end of the year. But I think, you know, like, honestly, I've been in Knoxville. Like, I'm glad T has a street, and I'm glad, you know, Peyton has a, you know, like, they should name something after Hendon Hooker, because what they did, you know, this year was pretty amazing. I did not see that coming from there. I think Deuce Vaughn should be there. I think he has had an amazing career and had an amazing year, and they won the Big 12 title, and I think he should be there. The other one that to me is kind of like, and again, we're on the West Coast, so it gets lost a little bit, is Penix. Penix put up ridiculous numbers. They had such a bounce back year from where they were. They were so bad last year in such disarray. And Kalen DeBoer deserves a lot of credit. But Penix, man, like, and good, look, I'm glad he's coming back because, you know, he's going to, hopefully he will get all his, you know, kind of shine this offseason as people hype up 2023. But, like, to me, those are the guys. Like, a Hendon Hooker absolutely should be there. I think
his downfall was the South Carolina game. You know, not that he got hurt, but that they just got destroyed. I think at that point, everybody wrote him off. But I think if you look, take a step back, even with that game, right, even with that, you know, he didn't do well against Georgia either. But even with that.
By the way, in that game, just so we're clear on that game, he had 3 touchdowns and 0 picks. Hendon Hooker did not play defense for the Vols.
Number 2 rated passer in the country. 70% completions, 3,135 yards, 27 touchdowns, two picks. Pretty good.
Give him a street.
Now, what's crazy is we just mentioned all of these quarterbacks, and you know who we didn't mention? Reigning Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young, who I'm not saying necessarily he should be there, but if we were doing a draft of just what, who's the most talented quarterback, who you would most want on your team, still Bryce Young for me. I think he's some, I think that he even did what he did this year, which was 3,007 yards, 27 TDs and five picks with basically no good receivers, is a testament to Bryce Young. Yeah. What's that?
No great receivers.
I think no great receivers. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, the All-SEC team came out. Teams, coaches, All-SEC teams came out. Coaches now, not media. Hendon Hooker, first team. Stetson Bennett, second team.
All right, Stu, last question. Jason Lastner in Iowa City. Now that Wisconsin and Nebraska have upgraded their head coaches, don't you think that both Iowa and Northwestern are overdue for modernization? If Ferentz and Fitz were to suddenly retire at the end of the season, who would each program's modern upgrade be, a la Fickell at Wisconsin and Rule at Nebraska?
It's a great, 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 great question. You know, the Big Ten West has always been kind of everybody's kind of this, other than Purdue under Brohm, kind of running the same 1970s style offense.
I have one for you, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, I'm curious to hear what you're going to say, because while it's easy to say they should upgrade from those guys, like, are you going to run the air raid at Iowa? Are you going to, you know, whoever the coach is at Northwestern, I'm not going to start bringing in a ton of 4- and 5-star guys. So it is worth asking if, with Iowa in particular, I mean, obviously their offense should be better than it is now, but are, do they, when he says modernize, I don't know that that means that I'm going to start running the air raid at Iowa, but go ahead.
All right, so I'm going to talk about your alma mater first. First of all, ride Fitz as long as he's there. I mean, he's the identity of the place. I mean, again, it's not my alma mater, and so I get it why so many sports writers get pissed off at, you know, 3-9 seasons. The guy's a really good coach. He hasn't forgotten how to coach. He'll shake up his staff, which he's done.
I am not in the fire Fitz crowd, just to be clear.
I think he got what you wish for. Yeah, but if he decided to retire, which I don't see that happening, but if, you know, if he was, you're making a coaching change, do whatever you can. Get some of that Stu Mandel, Rovell, Michael Wilbon money and go throw it at Mike Kafka and say, I know you like the NFL and you're doing really good.
Wow. That is not who I thought you were going to say.
No, he is like the rising, one of the rising stars. He's learning under Daboll offensively. He was with Andy Reid. I think he would give that place so much of a different vibe. I don't want to say, cause like Fitz has a ton of energy. Like I don't, you know, like I wouldn't, he has a ton of,
honestly, I have not heard that mentioned. And I actually think that is the perfect answer. I mean, and it's crazy as he was only this, if I recall, he was only their starting quarterback for one season, but it was a really good season and he got picked in the fourth round. And yes, like all of his experience for the most part has been in the NFL. Wow. Talk about a fast riser. He was a GA at Northwestern in 2016. And I feel like within 3 years, he was he was Pat Mahomes.
He got with the Chiefs and that thing, like Andy Reid is a good one to learn around. And now he's with Daboll, and Daboll's really like, it's funny when Daboll was at Alabama, I don't know, maybe Aaron Settle's our buddy covers them, got to know him well. I did not kind of get Daboll until we did one of their games and I was with Brady, and Brady had Daboll in two different stops. And I'm like, oh, I can see why people really like him.
You know, what's crazy. Daboll is known now entirely because of his NFL experience. And he will go down as a trivia question though. Who called the play on 2nd and 26 in the national title game? Brian Daboll. Okay. He was Saban's OC for one season. Northwestern is not lacking for money, Bruce. They just announced they're building a $600 million stadium. This is after building a $400 million practice facility. It's not going to come from me or Rovell. It's going to come from Pat Ryan, whose name is on the stadium and who has funded basically any big project you've seen at that school recently. I like it. I thought you were going to say throw it at your guy, Dave Clawson.
No, like, look.
That's Adam Rittenberg's guy, Dave Clawson.
Look, let Dave Clawson keep doing what he's doing at Wake Forest. He has brought them their football program and identity. He doesn't need to go there to do anything more than he can. You know, I think he's in a good situation for that. Like, I don't know how Northwestern is an upgrade for him.
Well, only in that I just think if at this point, like with the money being what it is, if you can get into the Big Ten or the SEC, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? I mean, you're going to have so many more resources at your disposal, but there's something to be said for if you're happy where you are.
I have one for Iowa, though. And this is
this is going to be good.
Oh, it's good. So we're talking about modernizing their offense. I think they bring one of the Iowa favorite sons home. He's a little different style than Kirk Ferentz, but Dana Holgorsen would get people's attention in Iowa City. He's from Iowa. He went to school there when he was with Leach and Hal Mumme. I mean, I can't imagine that would be a dramatic shift, you know, to go from, but he's a really, really good offensive coach.
If Kirk Ferentz retired tomorrow, there would be such.
Paul Woods would be the guy.
I was going to say there would be such a huge clamor for Bob Stoops. Bring him home. Bring home our.
I don't think Bob wants to coach in college football. I think
you don't think he'd be tempted by his alma mater?
I don't. He loves his alma mater. I know that because he's still on our Big Noon text threads, and we'll get a Go Hawks out of him where it's like, oh yeah, Bob's still on here.
He used to go to their bowl, even when he was still the coach of Oklahoma, he would go to their bowl games and wear his Iowa hat. Like,
here's the thing about Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops, you know that expression, living their best life? Bob Stoops seems to be living his best life. Like, he seems to be very happy. He will get to coach in the XFL. I will be a Renegades fan. That's his team. And he doesn't have to deal with recruiting. He doesn't have to deal with a lot of the stuff that's a pain in the ass stuff that a lot of coaches dread. And at this point, I don't see Bob wanting to do it. I'm not speaking for him. That's just my impression.
Well, Holgorsen would be more entertaining anyway. That was a great question. I'm going to give it some more thought after the podcast. But now you've planted the Mike Kafka idea. I think the thing is, though, Mike
Kafka wants to coach in college football, by the way.
By the time Fitz retires, you know, which could be 15 years from now, this isn't even going to be a thing. But I don't follow the NFL that closely. Is he going to be an NFL head coach by like next year?
I would think within 4 years, I bet he's getting interviews. Like maybe
4 years? Maybe if he's that hot, maybe it's in 2 years.
It might be. You know, it's like those guys heat up and they cool off fast. But I would think within a couple of years, he will get head coaching interviews. I also think, I know, you know, like this came up, maybe you were the one, in fact, who like texted me, I'm making breakfast for the kids. You're like, this can't be true, can it? And it was like a sizable college football account that it was tweeting out that Joe Brady was like if he couldn't get a head coaching job, was going to be the offensive coordinator at Oregon, right? You texted me this and I was like, all right, I know Brady. I'm gonna reach out to him. And within like 5 or 10 minutes, he was like, yeah, that's not happening. And he was like, my phone is blowing up with people. Like, I looked at my phone and all of a sudden I got all these people. And I don't think Joe Brady, and it's well known by people who are close to him, he doesn't want to go deal with all the college coaching stuff. They want to they want to coach NFL because it's more pure football.
This was a loaded, loaded episode. As always, send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We're going to go into probably a couple week period here where we're not necessarily on our conventional schedule, but we will be back early next week. We'll see you next time.